theme to start with. We're then going to allow the audience around New Zealand to have a talk with you. Do you find that when you're interviewed that people don't believe you at all and take the mickey out of you?
Not at all. Sometime some interviewer become member of my movement. It happened last week. I was in Australia. I made a radio interview, and just 1 week after, the interviewer tell us, "I want to help you. I want to be a member of your organization." So, you know, behind the journalist, there is always human beings.
Now, listen. I watched a video last night of you being interviewed by an Irish television interviewer. It was a sort of a Tonight Show program with a live audience and people ringing in. There seemed to be a wee bit of slapstick there, but it was they didn't try and put you down at all.
Oh, sometime, yes, but you know, for these people from space taught me what is important in life is love and humor. And if people try to have humor with me, I can have also.
Yeah.
And I am not always loser.
No, I think it'll probably be a bit of humor this morning too somehow. We'd like to get the story from you, how it all started. They came down from where? Well, you're in France. This was 1973.
Yes, 1973, on December the 13th, I was a journalist in a racing car magazine in the city of Clermont-Ferrand. Clermont-Ferrand is the center of France, close to Lyon. And I was on my way to my office. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning. And I don't know why, at this time I didn't know why, I didn't turn left with my car to go in the street where my office was, and I continued straight and left the city and went to a volcano at about 10 kilometers from the city. The name is Puy de la Sola. I stopped my car, and then by foot I went to exactly the middle of the volcano. And then I started to wonder, why am I there? Why am I here? Why I have a lot of job in my office. Why I came here? And suddenly I saw in the sky a very strong flashing light, something like a flattened bell made of a very shining silver metal appeared, was slowly coming down, and it was looking very heavy, and was in the sky without any noise. And so at this time, because of this, there was not any noise, I understood it was not human. And I was very happy to see that, because I was 100% sure it will disappear, but it didn't. And slowly was coming down and stopped at about 30 meters from me. And then a trap door was opened under the craft. And I started to be a little bit afraid. Not really, but a little bit. You know, we receive in France, like everybody in the world, very bad American movies showing invaders, violent people from space. So you, when you are in this kind of situation, you don't know what will happen. You don't know if it's good to be there or if it's better to escape. And I was looking, and I saw 2 feet, then 2 legs, then the full body of a small human being. And the first thing I noticed was that he had no weapons, nothing violent, no laser gun, nothing, empty hands, and a very peaceful face, and I felt a little bit better. I did not move, and he came to me. He was walking very slowly and came directly to me. Then he bowed. I did exactly the same, and I tried to be back to the cool journalist I was, and I asked a question just to see, to check if he could understand French. And I spoke with him, and he answered to me in a perfect French, and he told me, "Don't worry, we can speak every language of the world because we have a very high level of science and there is scientific technology which make us able to speak every language." And he said, "I know who you are." He knew me, he knew my job, he knew my family, he knew everything about me. And he said, we gave you this morning a telepathic feeling to come here because we have a message to give you." And he said, "Please follow me inside this craft." You know, I was a little bit shocked, and I was thinking, okay, I don't drink alcohol, I don't use drugs, I sleep very well nighttime. So I follow him, thinking, I will see what's happened. First thing I noticed inside the craft, I was very disappointed, because as I said to you, I was a racing car driver, also I loved airplanes, so I was very happy to see how is it possible to pilot or to drive this kind of machine. But inside, nothing. No panel instrument, no wheel, nothing. Just a circular room made of the same shining silver metal, like outside. The floor was made of a very blue, like one big blue precious stone, and two armchairs made of a kind of a translucent plastic, but it was not plastic, two armchairs. It was very, very warm to touch, very good feeling to touch. And then we sat in this armchair, and he started to explain to me the most fantastic history I never heard. And I will try to summarize it to start. These people, their name is Elohim, they came on the earth a very long time ago. There was no life on the earth, nothing. They built big laboratories. And inside these laboratories, thanks to DNA and genetic combination, they created all life on earth. And when I said all life on earth, I mean plants, animals, and finally, man in their image. And when I say man in their image, of course, it remembers you what is in the Bible. And the Bible describes what they did, but described by primitive people. And the primitive people they created were thinking they are God. Because for primitive people, when you come from the sky, when you are able to fly, you have to be God. They cannot understand. It's human like them. And their name is inside the Bible. You know, they have the first day Elohim did that, the second day Elohim did that.
That's a God, isn't it?
Yes. In English, most of the English Bible, you have the first day God, the second day God, the third day God did that. Mm. But the Bible, original Bible, was in Hebrew, and it's the name Elohim, was translated wrongly by God in singular. And what is the meaning of Elohim in Hebrew? Those who came from the sky. You know, the Bible was translated from Hebrew to Greek, then from Greek to Latin, then from Latin to English. And they lost the original meaning of the word Elohim. In fact, the Bible is the oldest atheist book of the universe.
We'll come back in just a moment. We'll take a commercial break. Our guest in the studio this morning is Israel. 309-3099 is our telephone number. It's 21 minutes after 10. We'll be taking calls a little later on, just not yet. One-on-one around New Zealand. My name is Tim Bickerstaff. With us in the studio is Rael, a former French motor racing journalist who was contacted by extraterrestrials back in 1973, and again a couple of years later, they took him back to their planet. What did they? This fellow you were having a discussion with in the spaceship. What did he want you to do?
He wanted me to spread this message. And okay. They love us, and they created us a long time ago scientifically in laboratory, and after, from the beginning, they were thinking one day human being will evolve and will be able themselves to create life in laboratory and to travel in space. So they were wondering, one day we will be able to come back and to speak with them, and we will tell them we created you. But they will ask for proofs. They will need proofs to believe what we say. So They thought, let's have some messengers to guide them in a way of a higher level of civilization, not so violent, because at the beginning they were very afraid for us, because the first human beings they created were very violent, fighting between themselves, destroying themselves, so killing, and they were very afraid for us. So they sent some messenger, like, you remember Moses at the top of the Mount Sinai, speaking face to face with somebody coming from the sky. God for primitive people, of course, but it was not. It was just these extraterrestrials, the Elohim. And also Elijah, Ezekiel, which we describe in the Bible, a UFO, exactly the description of a UFO. And Jesus. Jesus was the son of one of them and a girl from the earth, Mary. The reason why he said, my father was in heaven. It was not something supernatural. And when he was killed by the primitive people of his time, because he was speaking of love and fraternity, when he was killed, they took a cell of his body, and these people, the Elohim, create a new body, a clone, what we call now in scientific way, a cloning process. They took a cell, they make a new body, and 3 days later he was there to impress primitive people of this time, and to say, believe in what I said, we are the son of the Elohim. And so, these messengers are to prepare the time we are living now. Now we are from 1945, and I will tell you after why 1945, in the apocalypse time. Apocalypse means doesn't mean the end of the world, but in Greek, apocalypsis means revelation. Now we are able to understand. Now we start to create life in laboratory, as I said. There is a project in the NASA in North America to send a group of scientists on another planet and to create life. We will do the same.
Tell me this. What does this fellow look like?
They look like us.
Exactly the same.
And what is fantastic, and it's the reason why they had many children during the history of mankind, mixing them with human beings, you know, because they want to prove us we have the same genetic code. If a cat and a dog have sex, they cannot have babies.
So what,
but we can.
What? How many times were you? How many times did you speak to this this fella in the spaceship?
So there was this contact in 1973.
Yeah, but was it every for how long?
For 6 days, six times, about 1 hour every time.
1 hour, six times.
Yeah, six times.
And what, the same place you met?
The same place, inside the volcano. And he asked me every day, come next morning, don't speak to anybody, don't bring anything else you have now with you. And if you don't follow our what we ask you, we will not come back.
So after the six 1 hour meetings, sounds like golf lessons, really, doesn't it? What did you do then?
Then I had the most terrible time in my life when they left and when they say, please speak, spread this message. Maybe I have to give before the last part of the message. They asked me to build an embassy to welcome them on the earth. And to welcome them because they want to be able to speak with the government.
To build an embassy.
An embassy.
Whereabouts?
If possible, close to Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, yeah.
Yes, okay. If possible. And this is what the Ryland movement is working on. So after this encounter, I was alone, and it was the most terrible time of my life. I started to have a stomach ulcer because I didn't want to change my life. I was very happy having the job I loved. You know how much my passion was racing car. We spoke a little bit before. Mm. I was doing what I was dreaming to do before, from the age of 9. And suddenly somebody from the sky, okay, but told me, stop, go around the world and speak. And for me, it was just too much. So I started to have this stomach ulcer, and I was wondering, if I speak, nobody will help me, nobody will follow me. I don't want to do that. Then I sent the manuscript to the most important French publisher, the original manuscript. Dreaming a little bit, it will be lost, but it wasn't. And by chance, if you believe in chance, the day this publisher received my manuscript in his office was the number one man of the French television, Jacques Chancel. He's a friend of him. I did not know that. He read my manuscript, invited me to the number one talk show on the French television. I came, I spoke, and 2 days later, I received 2,000 letters of people saying, we want to help you, we understand your message, and we really want to help you to welcome these people from space. And that was the beginning of the Ryland movement. Now we have 28,000 members around the world in more than 40 countries, and that's it.
So you got 2,000 letters of people wanting to help you. I mean, help you to set up an embassy or help you get your act together. I mean, they weren't nuts or anything like that. I mean,
help me to spread the message around the world and to build this embassy to welcome them.
Yeah. Tell me this, and this question I suppose everybody asks you, are you a nut?
What do you think? You know, for me...
Well, I don't know. You asked me how the America's Cup challenge was going. Well, you're not doing too well there.
You know, somebody would say I'm not. It's supposed to be.
Hmm. But they'd all ask you something like that, wouldn't they?
So, no. No, you know, in our organization, we have many scientists, we have many religious people, we have 28,000 people, it's a lot of people. For instance, the leader of my movement in Canada, he was a Catholic priest and a theologian, he read my book, he left the Vatican, and now he's helping me, he's the leader of the movement in Canada. In France, it's Marcel Terrus, who was a scientist. In England, it's Dr. Marcus Wenner, who is a neurobiologist. And these people read the book, the message given to me by the extraterrestrials,
yeah,
the name of the book, and they helped me because it's so the best explanation of our origin. Before this explanation, there was only two ways to explain where we come from. The first one was a supernatural God creating us in 7 days. The second one was Darwin and the evolution, our ancestor being a monkey. And this one is the most understandable. We were created scientifically by people coming from another planet. And
How were we created? By images or something?
No, really, in a laboratory. Chemicals and put together
so
with
man
DNA.
Was created by chemicals?
Yes, absolutely.
There was nothing to do with sexual?
Nothing. At the beginning, it was a scientific experimentation, like we can now create life in laboratory ourselves.
Yeah. And how many people were created?
At the beginning, there was 7 teams on the Earth. They sent 7 teams of scientists and artists working together. It's the reason why you have so many beautiful colors in the birds and the fish and everywhere, and so many funny things evolutionism cannot explain. Because more and more scientists have doubt about the theory of Darwin and evolutionism, because there is some part of the chain who are missing, and they cannot understand. But by this way, we can understand, and I am very proud. In Canada, the first country is Canada where this explanation of our origin is teaching. They are teaching it in schools.
Okay, we'll come back in just a moment. Our guest in the studio this morning is Rael. Well, if you've just tuned in, welcome to One on One Around New Zealand. My name is Tim Bickerstaff. Our guest in the studio is Rael. He was contacted by a visitor from another planet back in 1973. He was dictated a series of messages explaining the origin of life on Earth and asked to establish an embassy to welcome these people back to Earth. Now, a couple of years after this, you then went to their planet.
Yes.
Can you tell us how that happened?
It was in 1975, on October 7th, I was in the southwest of France. I moved from Clermont-Ferrand to Brantôme in the Périgord, and it was about midnight. I had a second encounter, the same UFO, the same small human being, the Elohim, one of the Elohim, Eloah in singular, and then this time they bring me on the planet where they live, just to show me what kind of technology they have and what kind of civilization we can have on Earth if we stop to behave so stupidly. I mean, building atomic weapons. I said to you a little bit earlier, 1945 was a very important year for our history. Why? Because on August 6, 1945, the Hiroshima bomb exploded, which was the first nuclear bomb to explode on the Earth and to kill so many thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. And the Elohim thought, this is the time. They now have the energy to destroy themselves. We must help them. And because they said to us, please don't use nuclear weapons, destroy nuclear weapons everywhere you have it. It's too dangerous for you. And I am very happy to be in New Zealand, because I am French, but I don't feel French. I must say that. I feel more New Zealander, because really what's happened in the Pacific Ocean, it's terrible. And to have a nuclear test in the Pacific Ocean, like French are making that in Pacific Ocean, is terrible. And the Raelian movement supports the fight of New Zealand to stop it.
Can I ask you a few questions that our listeners would probably like to know the answers to? Now, this spaceship took you to their planet from Earth, right? First of all, how long did it take?
A few minutes.
How far away was it?
Oh, with our spacecraft, it was. We had to spend thousands of years to go to their planet. You know, because they have 25,000 years of difference of level of technology between them and us. Be back only to Captain Cook, when he came and discovered Australia and this area 2 centuries ago, that just 2 centuries. He spent almost 2 months on a boat coming here from Europe.
Yeah.
Now with the Concorde, we can come from Europe in something like 6 hours. Okay? This is just 2 centuries. So to go from our planet to their planet, which is in our galaxy but not in our solar system, we have, with our technology, with our primitive craft, to spend many thousand years. But they can do it in only a few minutes.
Okay, so their technology is what, 25,000 years ahead of ours?
Exactly.
Okay, so you landed on their planet. What was different compared with ours?
Everything. You know, I was exactly... You bring a pygmy who never saw anything of technology. You bring him from Africa, to the center of Auckland, and he cannot understand anything. He cannot understand the cars. He cannot understand the electric light. He cannot understand the microphone I am speaking inside now. Everything is like supernatural for him. You know, like in the wonderful movie Gods Must Be Crazy, when you have a little African man looking inside the color TV to see if there is people inside. I was exactly like that, because we cannot understand that technology.
What do they look like?
Oh, they have no cars, no concrete, no money, no work, no army. It's another world, you know.
They talk English or French?
Between them, they talk a very different language, which is close to old Hebrew, but very old Hebrew.
How long do they live for?
They live something like between 700 and 900 years. We can do same. And they did it to the first human being. You remember in the Bible, Adam, Methuselah, living 900 years, 950 years. This is a scientific intervention only making us to be able to live longer. And when they die, they take a cell and they recreate a new body. So thanks to this technology, they do have eternal life. And what is more fantastic, they can give us this eternal life. I mean, the people on the earth working for peace, for love, for fraternity, to give a higher level of consciousness to humanity, can have eternal life, can be recreated after death on their planet. When I was on this planet, I saw 8,400 people are living. They were dead on the earth, they died, and they were recreated by the Elohim to have eternal life with them.
So what do you eat up there?
They eat like us.
I mean, do they grow vegetables
exactly,
and trees?
They don't work. All the work is made by biological robots. They said man is not made to work, but to create, to imagine the world, to create. And they let robots work. Like it starts
so what
to
do
be
they, what do they do for relaxation? What would an ordinary day they do?
Oh, you can have the life you want. You can enjoy art. You can create, you can make scientific research, you can make music, you can make everything you want. You know, it's the most happy life possible to imagine. If it was my choice, I never came back on the earth. But they said you have to go and to spread the message we gave you.
I'm certainly glad they did, otherwise you wouldn't be here this morning.
For me.
Now listen, what about having children and making love? Do they do all that up there too?
They have sex, of course, and they enjoy it, and they say, we create you to have it also, but they don't have any children because they have eternal life. And if you have eternal life and if you have babies, you have very soon overpopulation.
So what's the population up there?
Oh, they have two planets. On one, there is a lot of people, like very similar to the Earth, and the other one, the one I went on, is the eternal life planet. There is a few thousand people living on it. It's the government in living on it.
They have any laws?
Oh yes, of course they have, but there is no violence. You know, it's very easy because they check everything before it's happened. I mean, they say there is no violence inside the brain of human being.
Yeah.
The violence comes only by people suffering.
Yeah. How long were you up there for?
One day. Just one day.
And what did you just have a series of meetings, did you, or something, talks?
Yes, and they show me the technology, some part of the technology they use, I was not able to understand. But the most fantastic part, they taught me about infinity, and the concept of infinity we are inside, and also meditation, how to relax, how to be in harmony with infinity. And it's very important. I will try to describe the symbol of the Elohim.
Which you've got hanging around your neck now.
Yes.
What is it?
There is a part which is a Star of David, and the other part is a galaxy looks like symbol in the middle. Yeah. And this is the symbol of infinity in space and time. So, just one second, just to figure out what it is. The infinitely small, they discovered, is exactly like the infinitely large. It means the atoms and the particles of the atoms are exactly like the galaxies and the stars. And what is fantastic, to have an image, inside your hand now, right now, you have small planets in the small subparticles you have, small planets with small human beings, maybe making an interview inside your hand. And the stars you can see in the sky, nighttime, they are inside the body of a huge being, which is maybe making an interview also, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is infinity in a two direction. And they taught me the sensual meditation, which is a meditation to feel infinity and to be in harmony with yourself.
Okay, we'll come back in just a moment. Our guest is Rael. We're going to give you the chance to talk to Rael a little after 11. It's coming up to 18 minutes to the hour at the moment. Welcome back to the program. Rael, our guest, if you just tuned in, former French motor racing driver and journalist. He was contacted by extra terrestrials back in 1973, and again a couple of years later went back to their planet. And the idea of the operation is that he has been asked to establish an embassy to welcome these people back to Earth. Well, now, the obvious question is the proof question, Rael. You've got none, have you?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Just a message. And I asked them, I said, please give me something. Let me have a photo, something to prove to people. They said, no, nothing. You have just to speak. And in the world, you have thousands of people ready to help you. And I didn't believe it. I thought I was like disappeared because I was really depressed at the beginning. But I received the support of thousands of people. And most of them, I can say 99% of the members of the Raelian movement, they never say, I believe you. They say, I understand the message, which is very important. They don't believe. They just understand. And they say, I was thinking same before. And I know among New Zealanders, I come here for that for the first time. There are people ready. They understand. They are not convinced by what I say, because I never try to convince anybody. Mm. When people say I don't agree with you, I say it's your choice, it's your freedom. But there are thousands of people. They say I was thinking exactly the same. I understand that it's the best way to explain our origin for me, and I want to help you. And I am here to put together these peoples. And I will be in Auckland giving a conference on Wednesday, 8th of April at 8 p.m. at the Aurea Center for this purpose,
that's
to find these people.
Next Wednesday?
Yes.
Yeah. What time is that at the Aurea Center?
It's at 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
Uh-huh. Yes, and it's the Aurea Center. And for the people who want to have more information, the Raelian Movement of New Zealand was created already. It's a non-profit organization, and the phone number is 9-445-4523, and they can have any information, because the book is not already in the bookstores here. It's very difficult to find. So by this telephone number, they can know where to find the book.
Don't you think that they would give you some proof if they wanted you to be more convincing? No, something tangible?
Of course. I asked that, but I don't have to be convincing. I am just here one more time to find the people who are ready and who by themselves think the same before. And this is my goal, never to try to convince anybody.